And welcome back to Veritas. I'm Mel Fabregas. Delighted to be here with my friend Ole Damigord from Spain. And before the break, I mentioned to you that something happened just a few days ago. And I'm trying to find the headlines here. But a few days ago, the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, on August the 2nd, did something, which I didn't know, by the way. We have a YouTube channel. Of course, it doesn't have millions of subscribers, but it has a decent size for the type of alternative media that we are. And I started seeing that a lot of the videos were being demonetized. And I'm talking about videos that deal with near-death experience or stuff that's totally innocent. And we have over 1,000 videos, so the majority of them are being demonetized. Apparently, in the past, YouTube has this technology, as many people are aware. If you put any type of copyrighted music, it flags you or even removes the video from YouTube. But in this case, ever since the ADL got involved, now they're using voice recognition. And if you use the word ISIS or if you use any word that they deem in a quote-unquote inappropriate for the advertisers, they demonetize your videos. My question is, why shouldn't the advertisers make that decision and not this entity telling us what we can or cannot say, Ole?
I don't know how many of my fellow researchers that have been shut down. Over the last 3-4 months, something like that, I've seen an incredible trend of people being shut down, their YouTube accounts being terminated without any warning. Sometimes they get like what is called a strike. You're allowed to have 3 strikes against the copyright things and so on, like you mentioned, music and so. But here we've suddenly seen that they've hit so hard, and even on videos that have been marked private so that nobody could see them, the accounts have been shut down without a warning. You know, like Robin from How I See the World, PK Truth from Melbourne, many others have been hit like this. And it's just like extreme censorship. And now, just a week ago or something like that, they made a whole new level of this censorship where I can just see like many of my interviews, they have just disappeared. Poof, gone. I've done hundreds, and I mean, I haven't taken them down or anyone else deliberately. They've just been shut down. And also when this latest attack happened in Barcelona, the authorities were telling people on location, do not upload anything on social media. Do not take any pictures or videos or anything and upload them. So it's extremely hard to find any evidence the way we normally do around these things. And then if somebody puts anything up there, within half a day, boom, it's shut down. And it just says that, sorry, this video cannot be shown due to, I don't know what it is.
Disturbing images or not friendly, family friendly or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but even more than that, that it's radicalizing or demonizing or something like that. But these videos have nothing to do with that. They're just looking and questioning these events. So once again, we're seeing that there's a global effort to shut this down. This is not the Spanish authorities that are trying to shut down Spanish videos or the American trying to shut down American videos. This is on a global scale where it's just they're putting this censorship in big time. Welcome to 1984, the Orwellian state.
I was just going to say, the more you see these things developing, the more I think that what Orwell wrote was just a script for the future.
He was a whistleblower.
Do you think he was a whistleblower or was he part of the team?
And the answer is yes. I don't know. But, I mean, he described it in great detail, what they were planning to do, and they have followed it in very exactly. So the thing is, it's all out there. You read Agenda 21, Agenda 30. You read books by David Rockefeller, Shabinsky. I never learned to express say his name properly. But it's there. They're telling us right in our face their plan, what they intend to do, how they intend to do it. And so people nowadays, they're saying, oh, this mass immigration of, you know, with refugees from everywhere. Oh, it's so horrible. It just came out of nowhere. No, it did not. It's been planned for many years. And anyone that is interested can find out what they're up to.
And this is what I don't understand about this. And again, I believe in legal immigration. I think that, you know, it's something necessary. The United States was formed truly from immigration, but there's a limit and there's a legal way to do it. What I don't understand is, and I want to be compassionate. And I know a lot of these people come from places that have been bombed to smithereens by us or our proxies. I get that. At the same time, you have countries like Saudi Arabia. Nobody talks about them in any negative way in the media. Why is that? And Saudi Arabia, don't they have an area that has over 1 million tents, air-conditioned tents, and other very wealthy countries that have the same language, the same culture, the same food? Why haven't they taken people? Wouldn't these people be more comfortable there than coming to the Western world where they don't speak the language, the culture is diametrically opposed to their beliefs, and then many of them come here, perhaps the extremists, and they come here and they want to change the culture here so that it's the same as the country they left behind. I'm talking about the extreme, not the majority of the population that's trying to come here to have a better life, because I know plenty of them.
If you don't want immigrants, stop bombing their country. That would be a good solution.
A good start,
A good start. I mean, why are people coming from Syria? If you hadn't bombed them, they would love to go home. I mean, it's very simple, but it's done by design. And NATO that used or was created as a defense alliance, I mean, now it's just a brutal tool of death in combination with contractors, the U.S. military, and so on. These combinations, it's just, it's horrific what they're doing. And then the result, which was designed and backed up by George Soros, even, I mean, you've even got manuals and instructions exactly how they should do and behave and so on when they go to these different countries. But I tell you, Mel, I believe that there's a big psyop going on here as well with this mass immigration thing, because in one way, I have not traveled around and specifically looking for this, but I did like 14 flights in 1 month. And not recently, I've been to many different countries in Europe speaking and so on. And everywhere they're talking about, oh, it's so horrible, it's so horrible. But when you look in the streets and you look outside, they're not there.
Yeah.
And it was like the day, there's only been a few alleged terror attacks in Sweden. And on the morning of one school stabbing, the very morning before it happened, in the newspapers, it said like, now 194,000 refugees are at the border of Sweden. Okay, that's 194,000. So I started asking people that I knew in Sweden. I grew up there and so on. So I contacted different people asking, have you seen them? And several people said, yes, yeah, I've seen them. So I said, did you see 194,000 refugees? No, they said. So I said, how many did you see? Well, in the south of Sweden, in Malmö, I saw, yeah, there was, I'm sure, 300-400 in the train station. Okay, that's 194,000 minus 300, give or say 500 to be generous. Okay, so I called Gothenburg, Stockholm. Yes, we've seen there's like, there was at least 400, there was at least 500. I said, could it possibly be the same people that had taken the train and gone north? Well, it could. So where the rest of the 193,500 and so on? I live at a point in Spain I've come here because we changed countries because two of my friends got murdered or died under suspicious circumstances because of our investigation into the death of the Swedish Prime Minister. I live in a beautiful place in the south of Spain. We can look across the Mediterranean. We live up in the mountains, but we can see on the other side, we can see Morocco. Officially, there are thousands of people trying to come from Morocco to get to Europe. And this is the closest they can get. And we can see Gibraltar from here, from this window I'm sitting by. So it is said that, oh, they're trying to do, they're coming from the whole of Africa into Morocco and these northern African countries. And then they go in rubber boats and people are dying crossing the Mediterranean. And then they get flushed up on the beaches and it's awful. I totally agree. If that is what's happened, that is awful. We've lived here since, what is it, at least 10 years on this coast. I have never, ever seen a rubber boat. I've never seen a refugee. I've never seen a dead body on the beach and so on. So what is going on? And I tell you, I think that we are being pumped with this whole thing to once again create mayhem, divide and conquer, hate between the races,
xenophobia,
hate between skill, exactly, all of that. Just, and I've been on many interviews, done many interviews in different countries, and I've said on some of the shows, I don't know your language. I don't speak Polish or Serbian or German hardly or whatever it is, but I can tell you what's in your newspapers. And they say, but how can you do that? I tell you, you will, in your newspapers, there will be a lot of articles about terror attacks, about the crime rates are going up, mass invasion, the asylum, the problems with these refugees, that the Muslim kids are doing horrific stuff, you know, beating people up. And then these terrorists that are put in jail, they will come with all of these demands, you know, saying, I demand that the taxpayers pay for my Muslim outfits when I go to court, but I will defy it all. And I want Muslim food in all of it to stir up the emotions, the animosity, and so on. And the people that will be taken care of, some of them will be given apartments for free, you know, food, clothes, all of that, much more than a normal citizen would be given, also to create this animosity and jealousy and anger. This is how you create a bomb. You have different chemicals, you put them together, you stir it a little bit, and then all that is needed is a spark. And that is exactly what we saw in Charlottesville, which is a perfect example, where, by the way, there were six different buses from the same bus company, same colors, all of that, parked before this happened, parked in the area, fended by, what do you call it, bumper to bumper. In some of them, people came out with KKK t-shirts. I don't know if when you saw a KKK t-shirt the last time, I've never seen any. But here they were coming out with KKK t-shirts, and some of the other buses that was bumper to bumper were people with Black Lives Matter t-shirts.
Do you think here, I can see the Antifa ones, but do you think these KKK ones were agents provocateurs?
I did not say Antifa. You said that. I said Black Lives Matter. So here we have two totally extreme groups that should hate each other that are coming to location with the same chartered buses and so on. This is crowds on demand. It's totally staged. It is totally staged, this thing. I saw it one time. I was in the north of Greece. And I was up in a city called Thessaloniki, and it was right before the president election. There was Mitsotakis and there was Papandreou. And I was stuck there for a few days. I was hanging around where the big it was a big open plaza in Thessaloniki where the Papandreou and Mitsotakis were giving the speeches in the evening. And during the day, I started seeing this whole long line of buses from Bulgaria, which is not far from the city, coming across the street. And people were getting off the buses. Bulgaria was very poor at the time. people were coming off the buses. They were handed these signs, you know, Papandreou. In the hundreds, in the thousands, these buses were coming in from Bulgaria. And then in the evening, I was right in the middle. I mean, the crowds were in the thousands and thousands there shouting for Papandreou against Mitsotakis. And I was looking at them saying, they don't even speak Greek. They're Bulgarians, many of them. It's a psyop.
I wonder if anybody would actually go and try to interview them in Greek.
Exactly. I just happened to be there, and I was just astounded. You know, I couldn't believe it. But they were Bulgarians, and I was in the crowd. I could hear them speak Bulgarian. So I tell you, a big part of that crowd were not even Greek. And this is the whole thing. We're so easily played. Just because somebody has filmed something with a cell phone, or we think, oh, it's shaky footage, so it must be real.
Must be real.
No, it must not. It's somebody maybe taking you for a ride because it serves their purpose.
So Charlottesville, you saw the footage of the gray vehicle. Did you see the footage of the vehicle being hit with a bat from the back? So I have two questions. Yeah, yeah. Could it be that the person inside that car fell, you know, it fell scared for his life, and that's why he had to accelerate? And by the way, the cars that were in front had nobody in front of them, almost as if they wanted this car to crush as many people as possible.
Would it be okay for you if I take a look on a bigger perspective, then we go into details?
Sure.
Okay, so Charlottesville, where is Charlottesville? Well, it's in the USA. So where in the USA? Well, it's actually only a stone throw away from the headquarters of CIA in Langley. It is only a stone throw away from the White House in Washington, D.C. It is only a stone throw away from the Marriott Hotel in Chantilly, where the Bilderberg had their meeting this summer, 2017, just 1 week after the massacre in Manchester.
And whose governor happens to be Terry McAuliffe.
There you go. So, okay, let's just play with the idea that if you carry a thing like that out, I mean, the closer to home, the better. It's their backyard, more or less. So we look at where this happened, and it happened in Charlottesville, yes. But this group of people were on their way to a big gathering in a park. But when you look at the location, it is 4th Street and Water Street. Water Street is the bigger one. 4th Street, where the hit itself or the event itself happened, is a narrow, very narrow street. It's not, you can hardly have two cars next to each other. It's that narrow. Anyway, so where the group was gathered and where all of this happened was not in the direction towards the park where they were supposed to meet. It's sort of like in a different direction. So what were they doing there? And when I look at these location that could be a possible false flag, what I look for are the signs of the standard signs. Is this an easily controlled area? Can they easily shut off the streets without being noticed and so on? And here the answer is yes, 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 and yes. You will have on one side, there's a little underpass, and you can see on still photos, you can see that there are metal barriers on the other side. So that street is closed off. Another street, Water Street, when you continue, there's a sharp bend, meaning that they could very easily be closed off. On the other side of the bend, it wouldn't be visible from where you are. Then you have vehicles from all different directions blocking off the lanes so that you the whole area is blocked off. Then when you look at, there's a drone footage. They say that it's drone footage from above. And you will see that the streets are more or less empty except for this massive gathering right in the middle of this intersection. And the angle of this drone footage, it's exactly so that you cannot see the impact of the car. You can only see the first car. It's a maroon colored van that slowly rolls forward. So you can't see of that footage, the aerial footage, if anything actually happens or if they just push that car forward. So we look at what actually happened. And here we have it's like you said, it was a Dodge Challenger, a young guy that they said got upset and drove straight into this crowd. And it's now there's all of these stories about, yeah, but it was, he was getting close to the crowd, and then somebody hit the car from behind on the sideline, and that was why he stepped on it or by mistake and so on. Okay, so that is possible, but let's have a look. You will also see that the area here, that when they carry these false flags out, they have to have some kind of location where they can have catering, where they can have their vehicles, where they can do makeup, whatever is needed, but out of sight for normal people. And normally they use parking garages or libraries, public libraries that are shut down and then used. And so everything is prepared there. And then when the time goes, within minutes, they can get the whole crew, everything set up, and then action, one take, two takes, three takes, or whatever is needed, and then get everybody away, transported away in the same buses that they came to location. So here we look at this, and in the intersection of Water Street and 4th Street, there is a parking garage where the entrance or the exit comes out right into this intersection, meaning that very easily that could have been used for the preparation. Then you look at the car. For one thing, both the cars, the van and the white car in the middle, seems to be without drivers. When you look at correct. The video footage and the aerial footage as well from different angles, there's nobody in the cars. And some people might say, yeah, but I saw somebody crawling inside the white car. True, but that was like a minute or two after somebody entered into the car and crawled across the seats in the front. Then you have the car that is said to have done it, or the young guys. You can see on his Facebook page the car. He's very proud. He shows this 2010 Dodge Challenger. And if you noticed that the color around the headlights is the same color as the car, sort of a darkish gray, but on the car that hits into the crowd, it is silver colored around it. Also, the car that is later found, or when the arrest is done, smashed up and so on, that car has two dark stripes down the hood. And this one that goes drives into the crowd does not. There's also a difference in the way the windows are tinted, and also the what do you call it? The rain sensors on the windscreen. And one of the vehicles has windshield wipers, and the other one has these automatic ones. Then also you have in the registration papers of the vehicle, which has a very strange or very unusual license plate number, GVF1111.
Right.
There is, in the papers, it says that it has a sunroof. But when you look at the car that hammered into the crowd, there's no sunroof. Then you have, when you look in the area from above and also during the footage, you can see on the footage, there are like tire tracks diagonal on 4th Street and also on Water Street, where it looks, do you know, like sometimes you see low budget movies, sometimes even real quality films, where they're doing, they had to do some kind of a car stunt where a car turns over and something like, and the car drivers have to try out the maneuver several times.
Yeah.
So you have these skid marks in the street. And then you see when it finally the car comes and it does the exact same maneuver and then turns over.
Trial runs. Skid mark.
Yeah, there are like 3-4 different trial runs before. And you will see there are skid marks like that, a diagonal on 4th Street and also on Water Street. So I would very much suggest a possibility here. Because also there's one still photo where you see the car, it hasn't gone into the crowd yet. And people are sort of running away to the sides. But that car, when you go into, when you sort of in go close into the details of the photo, you will see that the car is actually standing still because you can see the pattern and the tracks of the wheels itself. You would not see be able to see that if they were moving. And also you can see the exhaust from the car is going upwards, which it would not be if it's moving forward. That car standing still. And when you look at the crowd in front of it and compare to other photos and video footage, the signs are not there that are in the other ones. They're not the signs where it says love and freedom and all of these things. They're not there. And the same, the people that are being hit in the video footage are not in the still footage either. So I tell you, there's at least two sessions here, one for still photos with the crowd in one way, and then the video footage, if not two video footage, that has then been put together into one. What is confusing here is that it looks very real. I must admit that it looks very real. And I also believe that especially one young lady who is quite thin, with a like a small top, you can see her stomach and so on.
The one who was squeezed between the cars.
Exactly. I believe that she got hurt. But that is also what happens, you know, in real life, especially when there are nerves involved and so on. So at least she was hurt. Maybe they just drove straight into the crowd for real. But that was not this young crazy guy that they blame it on. Also, the way that it reversed away, it was a high-speed reversing, which is normally the way that only people, trained bodyguards or people from different agencies are being trained to be able to drive like that. There was no swerving. You can also see there's one video footage that is taken a bit up the street and then follows the car. And when he starts filming, you can hear that somebody's screaming and so on. And it sounds like somebody's being hit right away. But this is way before he goes into the crowd. So they manipulated the sound as well.
So they added audio. They spliced it and they added audio.
Exactly. That's it. That's how they do it. And also the still photo I was talking about before, when the car is standing still, the braking lights are on. But when you see, or the brake lights, but when you see the car moving forward towards the crowd, when the same distance of the crowd where you see that, there is no brake lights. And also on that still photo, you cannot see the two vehicles that were in front of it, the white car and the van. You cannot see them at all.
Now, let me ask you this. All these people, and I've heard that many of them who were arrested, for example, were found to have out-of-state IDs. So they probably came in the so-called buses that you're referring to. The question is, if these people are crisis actors, what happens to them after the event is over? Do they have to sign a, if you talk, we'll kill you, kind of a non-disclosure agreement? What happens with these people?
It's a very good question, because that is the main question. Why are there no whistleblowers among these crisis actors?
Right.
And I spoke to Chip Tatum about this. Chip Tatum, the CIA whistleblower.
Certainly.
Who's been involved in false flags during his career. And he said, it's very, very simple. What you do is, for the first, you pay them well. Now we're talking about the inner crew of these crisis actors, okay? You pay them well. That normally shuts them up. They also have to sign confidentiality agreements, which will, if they speak or say anything, will get them sued from here to the moon. Then there are also bouncers around this group. You will see very often when these things happen, there will be people on the outskirts of where the photos are being taken. You can often spot them because they're often looking in the wrong way, away from the people being treated or whatever. They're looking towards normal people. And these people, these individuals are often, they look like former military people, slightly overweight, but you can see the way they stand, the way they've always got good shoes or boots. I think that is from the career of what they've been doing.
Yeah.
Sometimes they have earpieces, and but they look like they're civilian clothes, you know, like with a whatever training outfit or just jeans and so on. But you can see them. I call them bouncers. They are also there to control the group so that normal people are not able to get in touch with them or speak to them. And also, they're being brought from out of state or from other countries, you know. So this is the thing with this global tour of terror, this group that is circling. I've been able to identify people in different countries, you know, from being the same people running around in the street in Melbourne as in London, as in Ottawa, and so on. So I would suggest, I think what we're seeing is the same type of people running around in police uniforms or SWAT team uniforms or ambulance drivers or firefighters in Paris, as in London, as in Ottawa, as in Sydney, as in Melbourne, and so on and so on. But what Chip said was, if it's not enough with money and these agreements, what they do is they just freak people out. So they gather a group and then they bring in somebody's grandmother or dog, beat her up or cut her throat. And that is normally a very efficient way of shutting people up.
What is the, you might want to grab something to drink. What do you think the end game of these massive, well, hold on, before I say that, I had George Soros in my mind here for a second. I remember I spent New Year's Eve in Hungary and in Vienna, but in Hungary, I was surprised to see so many people that vote for Trump in Hungary. But anyway, in Hungary, they hate, at least the sitting government hates Soros. And many people around the world, I remember when I was in Asia in the 90s, they wanted his head on a platter in Malaysia because he caused an economic downturn there unlike any that they had ever seen. So this guy, what he does, folks, he treats countries like corporations, like publicly traded companies, and he shorts them. He bets on their demise. I think this is exactly what he's doing with the United States. Why haven't we gone after him? If he is one of the or the main culprit of all these protests and what they're trying to do, a coup d'etat that instead of happening from the military, it's coming from these so-called people.
You asked the wrong person. I mean, if it was up to me, let's go get all of them now. I mean, we know who they are, most of them. They're about, I think, 8,000 in total, and we're billions. It's an absolute joke. But why don't we do it? Because the legal system have been totally
compromised,
corrupt, and they've got them by the balls. This is what Pizzagate.
Before you go to Pizzagate, look, I'm going to come out and say it. I consider this Antifa organization a terrorist group. There was a proposal, a petition to be signed, and it exceeded the 100,000 signatures to go to the White House. These people, back in the late 90s and the 2001, 9/11 happened. What happened? Well, we need to go after Osama bin Laden and the terrorists. If these people, in my opinion, if they're destroying property, if they're hurting people, if they're violating the rights of others to have free speech, we saw what happened in Berkeley and what continues to happen everywhere. To me, these are terrorists. Why don't we go after them as well?
Because they're the tools of the ones that pay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did a talk in London a while ago, and it was at the Holiday Inn Hotel. It was quite a, I think, a little strange group. I felt that there was a lot of people there with right-wing opinions, which I was a little confused because I'm normally not invited to these type of places. And so I gave a speech about when I was in Iran and, you know, how we must build bridges between them and us, and beyond, which was because I thought I'm not going to go into politics. I'm going to go totally the other way around, just love, compassion for all skin colors, yeah, races and so on. But while I was doing that, they were out in the street. There was a gathering of these Antifa, and, you know, like, I don't know how many they were, but they were, like, shouting, and there were smoke bombs, and they were waving the flags. The police were there, and they closed all the off the whole area, and there were police helicopters. It was really bizarre for me to be on the inside, because apparently, I mean, it was that meeting that they were against. And so it was very, very, it was almost funny because afterwards, when I left the meeting, the police said, no, you can't go out there. It's dangerous. I said, don't worry. I went straight out with a big smile, went straight through them, the crowd. And these people that were there were so young. They hadn't, I tell you, they had no idea what they were doing, I think. They were not angry, you know, they were not convicted in their anger or shouting, not at all. They looked at me like, am I supposed to hate you? Are you one of them? You know, like that. I felt that was all, that was somebody paid them to be there. Somebody right. paid them to stop that meeting. These are just
starving students that can't pay their student loans.
I think so. I think so. I mean, I smiled to them. They're not a violent feeling at all. You know, it was just hyped. And when I looked afterwards on me in media, it looked like, oh my God, what a horrible, you know, event and a big clash between the right wing and Antifa and the force behind the police were there. It was very quiet, very. The whole thing, I don't even know who threw the smoke bomb, because without that, there wouldn't have been any drama whatsoever. It is a psyop. It is a psyop. We're being played. That's the thing.
I think they're trying to create civil war in the United States.
Yeah, big time. That's what they want. They want a reason to go to the next level where it's martial law for your protection. That's what they want. And this is when you speak to people in Chantilly or in that area. I spoke to people. They say, no, sorry, Charlottesville and Chantilly. They say, but this is we get along well, fine. We never have any problems. You know, people treat each other with respect, and black, white, Asian, whatever. We get along. And then suddenly there's this, no, everybody's hating each other, and this will be boom, bada boom, bada boom. And then they target all of these very specific targets for the national identity, these statues of it's a General Lee and the southern states and yeah. all of these things that is part of your culture, even though it's a very brutal culture you have in that country. So they go for the deeper feelings where they can stir it up. And then we react and they say, well, for your protection, we just need to close down the whole thing.
And you see, boom. They want to remove everything from our history. What's next? Removing Washington, removing the Statue of Liberty, Jefferson, removing Mount Rushmore. See, the question is, if these people are so upset about our past, because these people, I think that the culprit in their mind is that they were slave owners and they're not seeing any positive aside from what happened. If that is what they want, why did they leave these statues there for so long? And why now? Why this particular moment in time to remove all our historic figures?
No, but it's expert in psychological warfare. They just use what they have, you know. That is why they handpicked locations. This is why when it happened in Charlottesville, I went straight in and started looking. Is there historical background in that town? Is there something very historical that happened there that could spark these emotions? But I couldn't really find any. But when you look, when you read the books and the Agenda 21 and these type of things, what they seem to be aiming at is to shut down the U.S., thank you and goodbye, and then move the power center to China, as far as I understand, and then use the U.S. as a national park. where they can go and hunt, more or less. That is what I've read. I have no idea, once again, but they do not want what we want. And where the cities, that is also where they try the big highways, all the small roads will disappear, only main roads that will be controlled. That is why they shut off all the entry and exits on smaller cities and towns. And then it would be like slave communities where the workers will be transported in trains to and from factory, and the rest will be for the elite.
Well, that's what Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030 are all about. They want people to move away from the countryside, to put them all in the cities and just control, you know, all of that. And as you say, perhaps the countryside will be given to China. I've had some information saying that because of the amount of debt that we have with China, that they, as collateral, they own our national parks. I don't know if this is true or not, but it would make a lot of sense. Now, you know, we're looking at this division all the time, and somebody sent me this little thing from social media so that we keep our perspective. And it says, here's what I learned about America over the weekend. After 6 months of organization and promotion, the quote-unquote largest white supremacist gathering in decades drew only several hundred sick puppies from around the country on Saturday. Several hundred. And on Sunday, 52 million Americans went to church, where everyone is welcomed, and we all drink from the same cup. 62 million Americans volunteer in any given year, and 83% of American adults give to charity. And 145 million Americans went to work today, where people of every race, gender, ethnicity, religious belief, orientation, and ability get along just fine. America is not those few hundreds who hate. It is those tens of millions who do not. Let's keep our perspective, unquote. And I think this is a very powerful statement, and I bet you the media would not want to release this type of information, seeing people of different colors talking and being congenial with each other, because I think this is the true statement.
I did an interview recently with a veteran in the U.S. police force. And he said, and this is totally also according to my own research, there are so many of these violent crimes that are not true. So many things with criminality in newspapers and so on, not true. Race crimes, race hate, that is not true. Accidents, car accident, no, mostly bus accidents and train accidents that are not true, that is part of this whole strategy of tension. They are there to scare us, to keep us in fear, but also to get the statistics up, which the statistics nowadays, you cannot trust it anymore. They want the numbers up so that they can get even more money into these, to fight all of these crimes, to fight all of these things, when in actual life, they're not real. So I tell you, if these forces stop messing with us, overnight, this world would turn into a paradise, because most people, I would say, I have never met a real evil person. I've just met a lot of more or less wonderful people that are sometimes messed up, like myself at times, from because they've been mistreated or are in poverty or are just in despair. That's when you react. So bless them. And I tell you, it doesn't matter. I've been to some 40-odd countries. I've been, like you, to many Muslim countries. Most of the time, I've just met extremely generous, kind, welcoming people that, if they live in a country that have oil or minerals or good location for when it comes to for military planes to stop and tank, fill up or whatever, or are great for drugs, or whatever it is. I mean, it's always gold, oil, minerals, weapons smuggling, narco smuggling, pedophile trafficking, all of these things. But the reason, if they're unlucky enough to live in one of these countries, that is when they get in trouble, just because they're there. Because these big forces, it's just greed all the time. Greed, more and more and more and more. It never is enough for them. So I pity them. I really don't think that these are happy individuals at all. And I heard a TED talk the other day where it was a billionaire who was giving a talk to other people of great wealth. And he said, listen, guys, it is only a matter of time before it's lynching time. Look at history. When the crack between the different, when normal people and then the elite few that have zillions of dollars and normal people that can't even pay their rent hardly, when the difference is so big, it's only a matter of time before they pick out the hay forks and the lynching loops.
No, but so that's said, right. Tell me in a moment what you're going to about to say, but just want to say this. This is why we have bread and circus. We have so much distraction. We have, you know, sports. No offense to anybody that watches the sports, but we have all these distractions so that people can remain docile. The fluoride that you mentioned in the water, the chemicals in the food, GMO, is to keep people docile. Chemtrails.
It is done by design. But what he said was to his fellow millionaires, billionaires and stuff, he said, how much money do you need? I mean, the only difference between a 300-foot yacht and a 400-foot yacht is that it's bigger than the other one. I mean, it's still a boat. It's a massive boat. And the way forward for the benefit of these very rich people is to start sharing, you know, spread the wealth. Because that's also good for business, because when people start having money, they start spending it. So business will be better and better. And the anger, the emotions, the hatred will go down. And while we're at that, I would also say to people in the elite that I believe are shit scared, because they know this as well. They know that when we, the billions, really start understanding how few they are, and how powerless they are. I mean, if you just strap them from their wallet, they've got nothing and no loyalty from the other members in this small little unit. One of the ways they could also sort of make a more peaceful approach to the rest of us would be to give us back all of these. I think it's about at least 6,000 inventions that has been squashed and hidden away that would benefit humanity in incredible ways, like with free energy. All of that is already there. It's just not being shared with us. And I think that would be one peace offering thing as well as give back some of these trillions of dollars or zillions of dollars that they have stolen, all of the, and share it. I mean, it's so out of balance now that it can't continue.
No, absolutely. I can see that point as well. But I think these people, the elite, they are all over the place. We think that we have a government that is there to protect our rights and our freedoms. But there's a government, an exo-government, that manages this government. I think this is the power that's behind all these uprisings and putting us against one another. You know, I love people, regardless of where they come from, the color they are. You know, for example, I recently visited London, and I grew up eating Middle Eastern food, Lebanese food. And whenever I go to Europe, I love to taste, you know, different cuisine. And I went to Edgware Road in London. Those who are listening to us from the UK know exactly what I mean. And I was told before I went, don't be careful with that road, blah, blah, blah. It's full of Middle Eastern people. And you know what? Most of the Uber drivers were Muslim. And my wife and my daughter, we enjoyed every single one of them. I like to engage in conversations with people. And then we went to Edgware Road. I struck conversations with a lot of people on the street. We couldn't feel any safer. So this idea that, you know, all Muslims are bad, you know, I'm so tired of listening to it. I understand when there's the extreme fashion, especially coming from a country that we never demonize in the United States, Saudi Arabia, Wahhabism, which is a cancer that spreads around the world. You have these despondent children who have lost their parents because of bombing or what have you. And they are mind controlled by this cancer called Wahhabism. And whoever's behind the scenes creating this cancer is doing it on purpose. So, of course, they go out there, they bomb, they become Unabombers, if you will. and they're blamed. The entire culture is blamed for the actions of these people.
Do you know, over all of these years, where, I mean, I've looked into, I don't know how many, it must be in the hundreds now, of these alleged terror attacks and so on. I have always, more or less always been told that it's a Muslim terrorist, and I have yet to find one. I tell you, I have never encountered a real Muslim terrorist. What I have encountered are mercenaries, CIA operatives, people
paid
from
assassins.
Paid assassins, people from the Gladio network, people working for the Strategy of Tension, involved with Mossad, CIA, MI6, these are the main ones. This is what I found. State-sponsored terrorism to force us into this new world order. That is what I encounter again and again and again. Not what we are being told.
And what? Go ahead.
No, I was going to interview a woman here recently who is a Muslim woman who is very much out there trying to defend and open up for Muslims and so on. But even she believes the news that these Muslims that are being blamed for it are the ones that are doing it, but they're not. They're so often not. These people, just because they got a beard and they look like an Arab, doesn't mean that they're a terrorist. But that is the way we've been pumped in over the years through media by design. So that nowadays, if you say Islam, your mind will think terrorism.
Yeah.
If you say Muslim, your mind, without you saying it loud, will say, ah, Muslim, he's a terrorist. If your name is Allah, no, not Allah, Akbar,
Muhammad.
But Muhammad, and you got a big mustache, boom, terrorist. And then I ask you this, if you go to any airport now, see how Muslim people are treated. I mean, not a pretty sight. It's horrific. And I can just say I'm blessed to not look like that, because my God, these poor people are not having an easy time. Then you have all of these alleged Muslim terrorists that are, you see on the CCTV footage, blurry images on airports and train station, where they look like extreme terrorists, like extreme Muslims, beard and sometimes Arab clothing and so on. Don't you think that if you were a terrorist and you really meant to do harm and you were going to do an airport or a train station something, don't you think you would cut your beard, maybe color it, maybe blend in a little bit, maybe not bring your passport or your driver's license, and maybe not scream Allah Akbar before you did it, maybe not have your bombs around your waist visible. It's just a little suggestion.
And throw your passport out of the plane before you crash into the Trade Center, right?
Yeah, especially when it wasn't an international flight. That's pretty good.
Right, exactly. You know, I remember back in 2001, here in Tucson, I had this friend, an elderly man who owned a Lebanese restaurant for many, many years, and his family. And after 9/11, I decided to patronize the restaurant more because I knew that a lot of people probably would stop going. And unfortunately, after being there for 20, 30 years, they had to close down because people immediately, the media started saying, oh, Muslim, this, that. And he wasn't even a Muslim. That doesn't matter. He was a Coptic. And then had another fellow colleague of mine from the corporate world. He was Algerian, had been with the company for over 20 years, a national salesman, and he had to leave the company because most of our clients would say, I don't want that Muslim here, you know, representing your company. And all these people had to suffer the consequences of this false flag.
This is what you never see. All of these people, I mean, just imagine being a Muslim, totally innocent, just trying to do your own thing, be kind, be gentle, be generous, be friendly to everyone, and everywhere be met with suspicious eyes, you know, suspicious looks, hateful words sometimes, all of these things, for things you had not done. It's extreme racism. It's just like being judged for the color of your skin. I mean, you were born with it. What can you do? That's the way you are. You can't, if you could, maybe you could paint it, but that's not really a solution in the long run. But this is pure racism.
That's a conclusion. to today's interview, and I'm so glad to have you back, especially during these very turmoil times. What do you want to tell the world? How do we overcome this powerful force? You know, I don't want to give them power, but they're trying to separate us. They just don't want people to be united because they know that if we unite, we can defeat them. So they have to keep us divided. What do you want to tell the world, Ole?
I would like to suggest that it is only through fear that they can control us. It is only through fear that they can control us. Fear is always in the future. It is not here. Even if somebody is pointing a gun at you, until they shoot you, you are okay. Fear is in the mind. So the battle, the big battle, is in your mind as well. And I would suggest try and find ways of becoming more fearless through meditation, selfless service, walk the dog, sing, joy, laugh, dance. Go meet these people that you are fearful of. Go make friends among the Muslims. Go help your Muslim neighbor or your black neighbor, whoever it is that you're fearful of, just because you've heard so many things in media, or you've seen things. Go find out for yourself. And in a laboratory, when you compare different energies, the highest energy in this universe is what we call love, not Hollywood love or I'm in love with you, baby, I fancy you. Not that love, but the love that parents have for a child, the love that will make somebody jump into a building on fire to save another human being, that kind of love. The lowest frequency in this universe is what is called pure terror, absolute fear. And when in laboratories, when you let different energies meet each other, what happens is that it's not that the two different, a high and a low frequency, they start fighting and then end up sort of like 50-50 in a gray zone in the middle between the two of them. What happens is the lower one gets annulled. It just disappears.
Equalizes into love.
The thing is that the higher frequency will nullify the lower one. It's just like when you're in a dark room, when you switch on the light, there's no struggle. It's not like the shadows refuses to leave or you see this battle between the darkness just, woof, it's gone. And people who are afraid of darkness, they know that it's so fearful, that darkness. Switch on the light, boom, it's gone. And I believe that's why people, I call them, I lost the word now, but... You know, people like Jesus and Buddha and Muhammad to a certain extent as well. What they said, Muhammad maybe not so much, but what they said was, I think they cracked the code of the matrix. They knew that whatever the problem, meet it with a higher frequency. And like Jesus said, not that I'm a religious person, what he said was, while you're at it, why not use the same formula all the time? Solve it with love. Meet it with love. Whatever the problem is, meet it with love. And boom, you will solve it. Not easy, but not impossible. Not impossible. And the more of us that starts tuning into the love frequency and start following our heart, where we have an inner GPS system from the day we were born or even before that knows what is right and what is wrong. There is this silent little voice inside you saying, hitting that kid, not good. You know, be kind to your neighbor, good. Kill that individual, not good. Do something good over there, whatever. You have the GPS inside you and your inspiration and whatever gives you goosebumps. That is the direction of your life if you follow your path in life, the one that you aim to do. So the more you start listening to the heart, which they don't want you to, they want you to be absolutely fearful all the time and pumping your head full with totally useless, fear-based, fear-mongering information. So the more we travel away from the heart, no, from the brain to the heart. Some people say it's the longest travel to go from the brain to the heart. The better it goes. And I sometimes suggest it's maybe it sounds some like a very big step, but if you make your day into like small little chapters, so that, for instance, now I'm being interviewed by you. That is one chapter. I try to do that in love and respect for you, in truth. Then when we finish, I will say thank you, bye-bye. I will open the door. I won't slam the door in anger or anything. I will treat the door with love as well. I will say hello to the cat with love. I will go to the car maybe and drive, not aggressive, but as much as I can, in love and respect with others. The more we can take these sequences and make them longer and longer and longer and choose love all the time, the better it is. Your frequency will raise, your inner frequency. The more you fill your heart with gratitude, that just amplifies and pumps up this energy as well. The more you appreciate your family, your friends, your life, your body, your limbs, your abilities, your creativity, that will amplify that frequency. And that the higher up you are, the harder it is for them to control you. They want your head down in the mud with their boot on top of it. And I tell you, I am surrounded by, I have people that are former assassins, mercenaries, agents, people that I don't know who are. I've had death threats. But also I'm surrounded by extremely courageous and beautiful individuals. But the thing is, I've chosen not to live in fear. Because I want to live free. If it ends tonight, then at least I really enjoyed it. I was on my path doing what I felt strongly for. Because if I let into fear, they win. If I stay in love, we win. Love wins. And so that is what I can recommend. Do selfless service. Do selfless thing. Help without expecting anything back. Do everything you can in your community to make it flower and blossom and just make incredible things. Join together. They want us to divide and conquer, hate each other, start loving each other. Go to the ones you fear the most or you are most afraid of. Make friends. Invite them home for dinner and find out that, wow, his name is Muhammad. He's actually really nice and I kind of like that curry over there and this and this. Go against these, transcend this whole thing in the name of love and unity, and let them not destroy us. Let them not take away our beautiful world from us. And then take your personal power back and understand that they can only do these things with your consent. The day we open our eyes and see what's going on and say, this is absolutely not okay with me. I am not going to be part of this. The more of us that do that, it will come to an end. And also, the last word I want to say is, the one you've been waiting for is you. The one you've been waiting for to make the change is you. Now use your creativity, your ability, your skills to find something that can help humanity to get out of this difficult situation.
That was a great, great manifesto. And I've come to the conclusion, Oleb, that the more in peace you are, the more calm you are, the longer you will live. Oleb Damagard, how can people buy your books, learn more about your work? Where can people support you?
It's very kind of you, Mel, and thank you so much for inviting me back. And also thank you so much for creating this platform for the truth to get out there, because we cannot trust mainstream media 1 cent at the moment. So we have to do the work. My website is lightonconspiracies.com, lightonconspiracies.com. I've got Patreon, I've got donation buttons, membership area, my newsletter, monthly newsletter, where I try to, every single month, to predict where's the next target. I go into extreme details, pointing out the things to become aware of, what is not matching up, and what is exposing it, these things for being false flags. And nowadays, I mean, I don't know any hardly of these that have been real. They're all of them coordinated more or less, false flags, false flags, false flags. It's almost getting dead boring. But also, if it's okay with you, Mel, if I can end with a prayer.
Please do.
I'm not a religious person, but I am a spiritual being, and I love this prayer. It goes like this. May the entire universe be filled with peace and joy, love and light. May everyone, and especially the ones who heard us, be filled with peace and joy, love and light. May the light of truth overcome all darkness. Victory to that light. The thing is, they need to heal as well. Otherwise, this madness will just continue.
Very, very wise words. Ole Damegård, be safe. Thank you one more time. And let's hope to have you back in the future.
Anytime, Mel. Anytime.
Thank you.
You too. Give my best to your family.
You as well.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And that was Ole Damegård with another Unify message. All of it thanks to you, Veritas member. Thank you for paving our truth journey another week. And tonight, I'll leave you with a quote by Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. Divide and rule, the politician cries. Unite and lead is watchword of the wise. Thanks for listening. I'm Mel Fabregas. Until next week, be well.